Hi, everybody. This is Jose Palomino, CEO of Value Prop Interactive, and your host for Business Growth on Purpose. And today's guest is Megan Zimba. And Megan is the founder of Z-Ink Solutions, and she's very excited, and so am I. She's the founder and the primary force behind Mavens of Manufacturing, which is a group that is really focused on encouraging young people, especially young women, to get into modern manufacturing, to really call out that manufacturing is a valid and in many cases a great career path for young people to pursue. So listen closely as we talk with Megan about Mavens of Manufacturing and a little bit about what she does to help give voice to manufacturers through content in the modern world of marketing in modern manufacturing today. So listen closely as Megan joins our show. Well, welcome Megan to Business Growth on Purpose.
Hi Jose, thank you for having me.
So Megan, why don't, just for our audience, tell us what you do and who you do it for.
Yeah, my name is Megan Zimba, and I am actually a professional and technical writer for industrial manufacturing. And I'm also the host of Mavens of Manufacturing, which is a video broadcast series that focuses on women in manufacturing and engineering.
Okay, so that to me, I found very interesting. One of the reasons I wanted you on the show is because just the whole idea of opportunities for people who maybe don't think there are opportunities there in this space. I think of a lot of people, young people who are looking, what do I do with my life? And they're not really told to look at manufacturing. And I think for women, probably even more so. So Could you tell us just a little bit about how you came about developing Mavens and what it actually has been able to do and how it's had an impact?
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, I came up with the concept and I actually presented it to an organization that I was part of, and they turned it down because they thought it was going to be discriminatory. And then I went out to eat with one of my friends who's also a good mentor of mine and brought up the concept to him. And then he asked why I wasn't pursuing it at all. And I said, well, I'm not prepared. I have this tendency to be overprepared. And I didn't have a website or knew how to do any kind of video recording or podcast recording. And he basically said that was a ridiculous reason for me not to pursue something. So he encouraged me to make an announcement. And I wanted to start it, one, because I missed having conversations with people in the sector that were making changes and setting new standards. And two, we have this work labor shortage that's going on in the sector right now, and a lack of excitement from the younger generation. So I really wanted to provide a platform for women who have been in the sector, because when the pandemic was happening, a lot of podcasts were coming out and I was seeing all these great conversations happening, but I wasn't seeing any of the women that I knew in the sector being highlighted in these conversations. So I wanted to provide a microphone for them so that they could come on and share their stories, in hopes to inspire that next generation, specifically younger girls, to get involved with engineering and manufacturing and other STEM opportunities. So it started out 2 years ago, just something that I wanted to do for fun, but it's grown really big now. And I'm getting invited to a lot of different events to hope to inspire the next generation workforce. And I'm getting involved with my own local community and helping schools and manufacturers bridge the gap between them so that they can start building trusting relationships together and help educate not just the youth, but also the families and their surrounding communities about what advanced manufacturing is.
Well, that's interesting. So the schools, when you say schools, are you talking at like the high school level, or are you talking about universities doing a better job of STEM recruiting?
So I'm talking about elementary, middle, and high school level.
Wow.
There is a gap between tech schools as well, but my main focus is the root of the problem. So I feel like kids at younger ages aren't getting exposed enough to what these STEM opportunities are. So a long time ago, trade opportunities were at the forefront. Like you had your welding and your tech ed classes and your home ec classes, but those seem to have taken, they seem to have been placed on the back burner, and we're starting now to feel those effects. because a lot of people aren't interested or they're not even aware of what advanced manufacturing is, or even, you know, some of the trade opportunities that are available to them. So when I was in high school, I knew that they were available, but since I was testing better in English, I was guided to go like English teacher route. And that seems to still be the case in certain communities where if they don't have the budget, then trade schools are put, or trade programs are put on the back burner. But in other communities, if they have the budget, they are the focus. You're starting to see a shift in certain communities too, where they're starting to develop like these academies in high schools where they focus on certain industries and sectors. So that's really interesting. But we still need to start exposing kids at younger ages to trade opportunities. So how do we get younger kids excited about engineering and manufacturing? And how can we tie the curriculum that they're doing now with some of the things that they need to know to develop those skill sets for things like welding or additive manufacturing or CNC machining? Where can we connect the dots there? So that's an area that I'm really interested in tackling and hopefully help find a solution for.
Well, what's interesting about that too, though, Megan, is that there is a there's a general cultural resistance to talented young people being, you know, going into, let's say, non-college tracks, right? So that's basically that. That's one. So it's kind of, I think there's a, people don't realize what, and you talked advanced manufacturing, what manufacturing is today in the U.S. isn't what many people hold in their heads. And then further on top of that, that's the general, but then the specifics is, it's not generally seen as something that people are talking to their daughters about. Hey, you're going to go into a job as a welder or something other than like days of Rosie the Riveter or whatever that conjures up that imagery. So what has been some of the, like the big successes you've had, and maybe even anecdotally, what, you know, somebody, a conversation you had, I'm just curious, where somebody had the light go on and say, really, that's possible? Because I imagine as people just don't know it's possible.
Yeah. So I actually did an event back in October with my high school that I graduated from. And I brought in 8 presenters. 3 of them were pre-recorded, but the others came in live virtually on a platform that I use called StreamYard. And out of the 30 students that were present, 4 of them were girls. And it was interesting to hear their perspective on what they thought manufacturing was. And they had no idea that the skills that they were learning in the courses that they were taking connected to so many cool things. So one of the presenters was from FedEx, and he had a live presentation of the warehouse that he was located in that tests out some of the newest automation robotics that are available for facilities like FedEx or Amazon. And what they ended up showing was how easy it was to program a PlayStation controller to actually control the robot. And that was something the kids could connect to. So to see all these kids slump in their chair and then perk up when they saw this PlayStation controller, that was the bridge to connect them to what they were doing in their courses to what they do in their everyday life. It was something of interest to them. And then the keynote speaker that I had, his name was Andrew Crow. He has a really interesting story. He's a 2-time convicted felon. He spent some time in prison. Manufacturing provided him a second chance. So when he got out of prison, he linked up with a manufacturing company. He learned about CNC machining. He became aware of how quickly it was for him to learn something, make stuff with his hands, and make money. So when he came in to share his story with some of these students who came from, you know, situations where they were predestined to either go to jail, end up in a gang, sell drugs, or possibly end up dying, he provided them that light of hope that, no, you can change the ending of your story. You can change your track. You can find a career pathway that's meaningful. And you can be productive, you can be successful, and you don't necessarily have to go to a 4-year college to do this. Like, you can go to a tech school, you can get an apprenticeship program, you can sign up for all these internships, You can get paid as you learn. And as soon as you get done with your learning process, you can get a job right away and you can make money right away to pay off your debt right away. You don't necessarily have to do a four-year college. So it's instances like that that, you know, can show other manufacturers that it is possible to make those connections with students and get them really excited about some of the opportunities that they have available too. Because right now, everyone is struggling to find that talent. And if you don't get these kids or the next generation excited about being something, being a part of something that's bigger than themselves, we're not going to fill those positions and we're going to find ourselves in a really a pinch on a national level. So that's one of the things that I'm really trying to showcase too, is that you don't have to have a four-year degree to be successful. And just because you go to a technical school doesn't mean you're less of value if you don't go to a four-year college. Because I think that's still a misconception too that we need to fix.
No doubt. And you know, we're without the makers, we don't have stuff. So that's
right.
That it doesn't get much simpler than that. And we've seen over the last 2 years, just, you know, the supply chain pressures, and obviously a lot of people ran supply chains way too lean for too long. And mm-hmm. all you needed was like a little, it was like a pebble into your engine. The whole engine gets shot. Right. So part of that happened.
Right.
But this labor shortage issue is a real thing. And it's mm-hmm. not just going to get, it's not going to just go away. So what you're describing here is a really important thing. And the fact that it really leans into encouraging young women to pursue this, you know, that's 50% of the workforce. So, you know, we're not going to get there without everybody involved. But one thing I've seen in some other related industries is companies, especially some small, mid-sized companies, take on some of the training burden themselves, like realizing we're not going to find that journeyman CNC operator with 10 years experience. We're going to have to take somebody with high potential and work on them. Have you seen that as well, where people are taking on more like in-house responsibility to do training and development?
Yeah, I've actually worked with a couple of companies who are really good about providing those opportunities. And I was actually provided some of those opportunities as well too. Being a tech writer, I'm not really involved with a lot of the hands-on making of things, but in order to create that content that tells their story, I need to understand the jargon behind it and the language and how things work and what safety protocols are in place and just a lot of the technical information in general. So I had companies offer me the opportunity to actually take CNC machining classes so that I could understand the jargon and understand how to write about it a little bit better. I've taken online courses with that involved welding, project management, even supply chain courses I took online, just so that I could take all of that information and talk about it like a subject matter expert without being the subject matter expert. So I think that's one way for companies too, if they can't provide the salaries that employees are looking for, that's one way to counterbalance that as well too. If you're willing to invest in your employees and show that you care about their continuous improvement, more people are going to apply for those jobs if they know that they have that opportunity to climb up the ladder. Because that's another thing that seems to be preventing individuals from joining the sector. They don't think that there's room for them to grow or turn into leaders themselves. So why would they enter a sector if they don't have those promotional opportunities available to them? And if companies start promoting that, hey, we care about your education, we care about, you know, advancing your skills every day, because with the technology now, it's advancing every single day, and you have to be able to keep up with that. And if you're not allowed that opportunity within your own company, they're going to find somewhere else that is offering those opportunities. So, you know, it's a great balance in terms of, you know, what can you offer in addition to not being able to offer, you know, an increase in salary. Other things include, you know, childcare, unlimited PTO, flex schedules. So things like that, I think, are really going to get that next generation interested in applying to more jobs that are in the sector of manufacturing and engineering.
So, and that sounds like, you know, when if you do those things, so you may start off with, hey, we can't find enough people. We're going to have to develop them. So we start developing people. I think I have to believe that also starts changing your culture in a positive way. It starts signaling to people like, hey, there's no dead end jobs here. So yeah. The other side of that, of course, so there are going to be companies that are not going to do any of those things. They're not thinking that way. And so just your thoughts on, like, in other words, the resistance is not just on the labor side. I don't want to get into these careers. There's also, you know, some long-standing practices in manufacturing that aren't always positive for people who want to get into it in the first place. So what's the word there to somebody running a mid-sized, you know, contract manufacturing firm? What should they be looking to say? What are like one or two things they should look to try to implement to lean into the new realities that you're describing?
I think they need to be more supportive of the women leaders that they have, as well as the younger leaders that they have. So in what ways can you provide that support so that they can move up the ranks? They also need to be more respectable to diverse groups. So, you know, it's very well known that this sector is predominantly white males. And without that diversity, you're not going to have the diversity of thought, and you're not going to be as innovative as you could be versus other companies who are investing in DEI efforts. So I really feel like we need to have uncomfortable conversations on how companies can get better in accepting DEI efforts, because there is still a lot of negative things happening within the sector. I don't think it's going to be as tolerated as it used to be back in the day, simply with all the social media stuff that's going on and how transparent information is right now. You can't get away with that negativity as much as you could, because of the social media channels that are available. And word of mouth is a lot quicker now. And if people are unsatisfied with how a company is treating them, they're going to let their network know, and they're not going to be shy about it. I see it every day happening on LinkedIn. So I think it's really important that it starts with leadership. Leadership needs to take the lead and actually mean what they say, because I've also worked with companies where they would broadcast their core values, but then they themselves wouldn't follow it. So it just left a bad taste in everybody that worked at the company.
They had the consultant to help them write the core values, but it wasn't necessarily a reflection of their core values, right? So that's the tricky part. Yeah. Any kind of mission, vision thing, it has to be real, or else it's just an exercise and you're just wasting the money.
Yeah. So I don't think it's as bad as it used to be when I first started in manufacturing in 2008. I see a lot of improvements, but I also still see some of that implicit bias that's happening. And, you know, some people are just unaware of it because they've never been called out on it before. So I really feel like we need to have groups of empowerment to let people know, hey, that's not right. You shouldn't be doing that. So the more we can, you know, call that stuff out and bring to light, the more we're apt to fix it and have solutions for it. And I think that's better for all of us in the long run, because with the younger generations, they really want to be part of something that's bigger than themselves, and they don't really have tolerance for any type of behavior that, you know, doesn't include everyone. They want to be all inclusive. They want different groups involved. And if there's any group that, you know, goes against that, they're not going to want to be a part of it.
Right. So in many ways, I mean, there's going to be a tipping point where, you know, companies that try to do good, try to treat people fairly and rightly, are going to just do better than those companies that don't think it's important. They say, well, you know, there's a paycheck, that's how good we are. Well, the reality is what we're seeing in these last 2 years, just offering a paycheck doesn't secure you that you're going to have the people you need to make the things you want to make, to sell, you know, to achieve the revenue you want to achieve. So even if for no other reason, then it's good business. It's good to be a place that that people want to work at, right? And you're working at the grassroots, Megan, which I think is so admirable. And you're really working kind of almost like a culture shift in education and so on. It's such an important thing to do. So I commend you for that and really appreciate you being there doing that. But you also have, in addition to this advocacy work, which is really important to help young people see the potential in careers in manufacturing, you also, as you mentioned, are a technical writer. So mm-hmm. your firm, and you have, you write. So tell us just a little bit about what you do there, kind of like maybe like it's like Clark Kent's a reporter during the day, Superman at night. So this is your day job. What do you do there, and how does that work?
Yeah, so Z-Ink Solutions is my freelance business, and I provide technical writing and content creation services for industrial manufacturers. So anything from social media campaigns and management to ebooks, white papers, technical articles. I do a lot of ghostwriting for people within the industry who want to have blogs, but they're not necessarily great at putting their ideas to paper. So I help them organize their thoughts and provide writing assistance there. I also do a lot of case studies or application stories. So companies who want to show the value of their products and services. And, you know, there's a lot of NDAs out there. So I know how to take that information and provide the right talking points without exposing too much information where they might get in trouble. And then I do a lot of email campaigns as well, too. Another thing that's coming up is I might be helping an individual with a book idea that they have. So I'm really excited about that opportunity. I've done my own book layout before, never brought the book to fruition, but I'm really excited to help this person out, kind of organize their thoughts and provide an outline and then see where that takes them when publishing their own book. So I'm learning every day about how to improve my own writing skills, but that's pretty much the general.
No, I love it. Services. I mean, it's really a hard thing to do because let's face it, a lot of very technical writing can either veer towards being too dry or inaccurate. Like if you have somebody who doesn't understand the terminology, you can end up with a first, second, and third draft that doesn't just quite capture it and wouldn't be credible to the target audience. With your background, your training, you mentioned some of that, and your commitment to the space, to the sector, I think it's really probably what gives your work the power it does. So Megan, just as we close, if somebody wanted to know more about you, either your Mavens work or your Z-Ink work, where should they go to find you or to connect with you?
Yeah, the easiest place to go is on LinkedIn. I have a profile on there, so feel free to connect with me and reach out to me on there. Otherwise, the Mavens website is mavensmanufacturing.com, and then Z-Ink is z-inksolutions.com, and you can see some of the services that I provide on there. Mavens, I have a list of events and interviews and content that I've created on there. That page is still a work in progress, but that should keep you up to date on things that I'm currently working on.
Fantastic. Megan Zimba, thank you so much for being with us today on Business Growth on Purpose. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jose. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.